Call the meeting to order. Oh, I'm already ahead of me. All right.
Pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call.
John Steinbrink.
Here.
Monica Juhas.
Here.
Here.
Steve Kmorkowitz.
Here.
Clyde Allen.
Here.
Mike Serpy.
Quorum being present. Item 4, minutes of the meeting, May 6, 2013. Presented to board members in written form. Motion to approve.
Second.
Motion by Clyde, second by Steve. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Aye.
So carries. Brings us to item 5, public hearing. We have one this evening, which is item 8, and consider 2013-2014 liquor license application renewals.
Mr. President and members of the board, I will list for the record the renewal applications that are on the agenda tonight. There's two of them that aren't, and we'll discuss that later. So these would be for the licensing year July 1st, 2013 through June 30th next year. And for brevity, I'll just read the trade name and the addresses of the licensed establishments that are on the agenda tonight, but note that if and when the licenses are granted and approved and issued, they will be issued in the name of the agent of the corporation or of an individual, and only for the premises that are described where liquor can be, alcohol can be stored, served, consumed, or sold. So the first class would be the Class A fermented malt beverage, Pantry 41 Sitco, 7511 118th Avenue, PDQ store number 352, 8800 75th Street. We go to State Line Sitco, 12720 Sheridan Road, Truesdale Mini Mart, 8531 75th Street, Walgreens, 7520 118th Avenue. Then we have our Class A fermented malt beverage and Class A intoxicating liquor licenses. That would be for Ira's Liquor Store at 4417 75th Street. And just note there's one outstanding Community Development Department violation, zoning violation regarding landscaping and parking lot patching. And that is actually the only outstanding building zoning or code violation or fire code violation we have on the agenda tonight. So just make note of that for the applicants that we're talking about tonight. Then we have the Target store at 9777 76th Street. Then we go for our Class B fermented malt beverage just at Big Oaks Golf Club, 6117 123rd Place. And then we have our Class C wine and Class B fermented malt beverage, and that's for Hanada Sushi and Hibachi at 8501 75th Street. Then we go to our combination Class B liquor licenses. It would be a Class B fermented and a Class B intoxicating. Chancery Pub and Restaurant, 11900 108th Street. Chili's Grill and Bar, 6903 75th Street. Earl's Club, 7529 88th Avenue. Famous Dave's, 9900 77th Street. Gordy's Prairie Pub, 3812 Springbrook Road. Halter Wildlife, 9626 113th Street. The Olive Garden, 10110 77th Street. Ray Radigan's, 11712 Sheridan Road. And once again, note the delinquencies regarding utility bills, real estate, taxes, personal property taxes, sewer surcharge. Mr. Radigan is aware of these, as he is every year, and I actually did talk to him last week, and we discussed what he had outstanding, and I told him that if any of that was not paid before June 1st, there'd be additional interest charges, and he's aware of that. But also the finance department is requesting that he pay those delinquencies with a cashier's check, money order, or cash, because he's bounced a few checks in the last year. So he's well aware of that, and he always pays up because he does want his license. Ruffalo Special Pizza, 11820 Sheridan Road. The Starlight Club, 8936 24th Avenue. Then we have Mikey's at 109, sorry, Mike, I'm a little blurry myself, Sheridan Road, 10936 Sheridan Road, and the and they just have a little personal property outstanding. They'll pay that tax. The Village Supper Club, 10909 Sheridan Road. The Wooden Nickel, 11606 Sheridan Road. Once again, Mr. Nickel has some delinquencies, as he has pretty much every year. And I'm also going to requesting that that he paid those funds in and his license fees in a cashier's check, money order, or cash, because he did bounce his check last year and took me a couple phone calls and a letter before I actually had those funds in my hand. And we won't do that again this year because actually the license is already issued. And, of course, you can threaten to bring them back, but it's, you know, he needs to pay those, and he will pay those with that type of payment. So the premise descriptions have all stayed the same this year. And, again, we talked about the building, zoning, or fire violations. As always, anything between now and the time the licenses are issued will have to be paid. If anything comes up in the meantime, I will wait till after June 1st because some of those delinquencies, again, will accrue interest, and then approval letters go out the first week in June. Everybody needs to pay their fees, pick up the license that last week in June. It's the same thing that we've done many years. Just a few of those items where they need to pay cashier's check this, or bring a cashier's check this year. I've discussed the renewals with Chief Smetana, and he's given his approval to renew these applications. He's reviewed them. His staff has reviewed them. And I've also talked with Chief McElmary. There are a few minor fire alarm and sprinkler fees that we just discussed today. Those, again, those will also be added to something that needs to be paid before anything's issued. The renewal application for the Holiday Inn Express will be on June 3rd's meeting. They were a little late getting their application in, and I needed 15 days for the application to be in my office before we acted on it. And the license renewal for BP will not be considered by the board until first the Plant Commission has their meeting regarding the conditional use permit violations on May 28th. And then we do have to give notice, and so that the earliest and the only time one meeting in June will be June 17th. As a side note, and nothing we need to really discuss tonight, but BP does owe a lot of fees. A letter will be going out to them after May 28th. Just to give them that time instead of just dumping it all on June 17th and saying, okay, now you have a week to pay everything and get your license. So we'll make a little note of that ahead of time just because the application will be on the agenda late. So, again, any fees, any delinquencies, publication fees, fire sprinkler alarm fees, anything that comes up or anything that's listed here, it'll be updated, and those would all have to be paid just as always. Before the license actually goes out of our office. So I would recommend approval of all these applications tonight. Subject to exactly what I discussed, yes. And it is a public hearing.
Once again, this being a public hearing, I will open it up to public comment or question. Anyone?
No sign-ups tonight.
Anyone wishing to speak? Hearing none, I will close the public hearing and open up the board. Comment or question?
I'd move approval of the licenses subject to the satisfaction of the delinquencies that were stated by the clerk.
Second, with the understanding that the two will be paid by cashier's check bank check.
Exactly. And if it becomes a problem next year, then I'll just start requiring everybody to do that. But right now, we'll just take care of these two this way.
Yeah. Motion by Mike, second by Clyde. Any further discussion? Hearing none, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
We don't need a roll call.
No,
right.
We don't.
Okay. Opposed? So carries. That concludes item 5, public hearing. Move on to item 6, citizens' comments.
There were no sign-ups tonight, Mr. President.
Anyone wishing to speak? Hearing none, I'll close citizens' comments. Move on to item 7, administrator's report.
Nothing tonight, Mr. President.
Moving on to item 8, new business. First item being item 8, consider the award of contract for the State Highway 165 water tower painting project.
Mr. President, members of the board, Public Works had advertised and bid out painting of the water tower on 165, approximately the 5700 block. We received 4 bids as a result of that RFP. Low bid was L&T painting for $304,000 and $304,800. They were pre-qualified. They have done quite a bit of painting within Wisconsin. Dixon Engineering has been our consulting engineer with this project. They're very familiar with all 4 of the bids. Bids range pretty widespread. It had 1 at 304, 304,000, 103, 323,000, 2 higher ones at 506, and the highest one at 561. I asked them really why you would have a spread that high on it. And he said it's really a function of who's looking for work and who will take work at a high price. Engineer's estimate that we had was around $320,000. So by the time you add the consulting engineering in with the $304,000, we're pretty much right on where we planned on being. So we plan on painting the interior, the exterior, the wet interior, and making some improvements on there, raising the aviation lights, making all the lights some LEDs with a 50,000-hour lifespan on it, and improving the electrical on it, and some cathodic protection improvements on there. So with that, I would recommend a Wardle to L&T Painting for $304,000. And I can answer any questions this time.
Question?
So moved.
Motion by Monica.
Second.
Second by Steve. Any comment or question? Clyde?
Thanks, John. Good explanation. My question, the exterior overcoat.
Yes.
Just in that portion alone, the spread is huge. What is the difference on doing the overcoat?
I really don't know. I mean, I think it's really like I say, some companies will, you know, they'll take work if you pay them enough, and that's what Dixon had said. Sounds like classic protective coatings does stuff like that. They bid every job. If they're really busy, they'll just bid it high in hopes that there's not too many people that bid it, and hopefully they get it on award. But like I say, L&T Painting is pre-qualified. They've done a ton of towers within Wisconsin, and they seem to be a very reputable company, and they are pre-qualified.
Okay, right. I didn't question when you said pre-qualified. It just said seemed the exterior overcoat, just why a spread is so big in just that one category.
Thank you. I guess I really don't have any more of a formal explanation.
Okay. We have a motion, a second. Any further discussion? Steve?
Yeah, one question for John. John, does epoxy painting inside the tank?
Yeah, we're going to have the same type of painting and prep that's approved. There's actually a different method that you use for the interior wet versus the exterior dry and the interior dry. So it's a tanemic-based paint. One of the things that's an improvement based off what we had with the paint in years past, if you kind of notice some of the towers, I think the 165 tower has it, Timber Ridge tower has it, you get like a blotching effect. It kind of looks white. What that is caused from, in years past, and everyone's changed their process and improved it since then, but when those towers were painted 15, 20 years ago, they put the paint on, and then they put a clear coat on. When they put the clear coat on, there was really no clear indicator of what was covered. So the areas that were missed with the clear coat, the UV rays actually faded the paint that was on there. And so that's kind of why you get that blotchy look. The new tanemic paint has that sealer built right into it. So once you paint it, it's covered, and so they've improved the process, and it's a very good paint that they used.
They spell your name wrong. We have a motion, a second. No more discussion. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So carries. That brings us to item B, to receive Planning Commission recommendation to consider Ordinance 13-15 to amend the Courtyard Junction Condominium Planned unit development to remove the requirement at no time shall more than 20% of the completed units be rented as individual units.
Mr. President, members of the board, before you is Ordinance Text Amendment 13-15. It's the request of Mike Dilworth, agent for Courtyard Junction. Courtyard Junction is a condominium planned unit development community. Specifically, they are requesting a modification in their planned unit development. This is for all of the apartments that are identified as properties located at 5732, 5744, 5766, 5788, 5812, 5822, 5846, 5906, and 5920 80th Street. Specifically, Courtyard Junction was an apartment development when in February of 2008 they had proposed to modify the development as a condominium development. And at that time, there were 7 12-unit buildings and 2 6-unit buildings, or a total of 96 units. They range in size from 1135 square feet to 1193 square feet. And it's on just over 11-acre property on 80th Street in the village. Specifically, they are requesting modification of the PUD in order to modify one of the provisions that address how many of the units can be rental units within this development. Again, as part of the original conversion to a condominium development, they believe that all of them would be owner-occupied. In 2008, 2009, 2010, things didn't go very well for them trying to convert them to owner-occupied units. And, in fact, they only did convert or sell 24 of those units to owner-occupied. The remainder, or 72 units, still are with the original owner, and they are rental units. So specifically what they are asking for is a modification of the planned unit development provision that states that no more than 80% of the units can be rented on this particular in this particular development. So this would include both the ones that are owner-occupied, the 24, as well as the 72 rental. They would like to convert it so the option would be available so that all of them could be rented at any one point in time. They brought this matter before the Plan Commission. There was a public hearing. The Plan Commission recommended support, subject to some conditions, one of which is that this development always remain a condominium platted development, that it, that plat is not vacated. And then there were some other provisions that they had discussed that this particular modification or change to allow rental for this condominium development would not be precedent-setting, so it would not create a standard for any other developments within the Village of Pleasant Prairie. And then it was also subject to the board approving this text amendment. As part of this approval, they would also have to, if they haven't done it already, modify their condominium declarations to reflect the same provision. Ordinance 1315 that you have before you strikes out all of those specific references to the percentages for those being allowed to be rented. It also strikes out any provisions that refer to the declarant or the declarant of the original development, so that whether you're an owner of the one of the 24 or you're the owner of the remainder of the 72, that the units can be rented. Again, let me remind you that the 72 are legal nonconforming. They're rented now. They never converted to owner-occupied. So it's becoming a legal nonconforming situation into a conforming situation by allowing them to rent them all at this particular development site. With that, if there's any other questions, I'd be happy to answer them. And there is a representative here from Courtyard Junction that would be happy to answer any questions.
Gene, the question was raised because I think you notified the owners that are there, but there was a low response or turnout. But you do know that they were all notified and did receive notification?
Well,
and I think it was just by mail and not by certified mail or anything. Give us your name and address for the record.
Paul Ann Phillips. I represent Mike Dilworth. I'm also a board member of Courtyard Junction.
And how did you notify the owners?
We sent a letter requesting a special meeting. All of the condo owners were invited, and six attended.
Okay.
You have a homeowner association there?
Yes, we do.
And the fees are what?
$139 a month. So we still would pay condo fees monthly regardless.
Even the rentals have to be $139 also?
Yes, we've been paying the monthly condo fee all along since we converted February of 2008. So it isn't that we're not going to be paying the condo fee. It just gives an opportunity, if we would choose to sell to an investor, that they could continue to rent out the units. And we have maintained the same budget. We haven't had to do a special assessment. It has stayed $139. I don't know why it wasn't $140, but it stayed $139 since
we
started.
What would these rent for approximately? Could you share that with
we
us?
Have rents at, I'm not in the property management division, but I believe right now $935 to $955 they're renting per month, and we have no vacancies right now.
Yeah, with the market and the way it is today, I can see this.
Gene?
I also wanted to mention that we also sent notification out on April 29th to the owner as well as all of the owner-occupied units in the development as well as the adjacent property owner. So we also sent notification regarding the same matter.
All right. Thank you.
Move approval of ordinance 1315.
Thank you.
Second.
Thank you.
Motion by Mike, second by Monica. Any further discussion? Clyde?
Just a comment to clarify, that to reiterate that there would be not no precedent setting that this is done based on economic, the economic impact at the time as to what transpired to make these rental units.
I think the precedent correct? Or the conditions are is this development started as apartments, converted to condos, and now they want to be able to rent it as though they were apartments before. So in some instances, we have condos. They started as condos, and that was when the Plan Commission approved those increased densities. You know, one of the gives from the developer was that it wouldn't turn into an apartment development. This started off as an apartment development. So in actuality, they're going back to what they were, except that, you know, now that it's been condoed, we need to preserve the rights of the people who purchased condo, you know, condominium. So this is unique in the sense that it started as an apartment complex. We approved it as such. Okay. And so now it'll function that way, but we don't want to see the condo plat eliminated.
So it is a unique situation, so it would never be precedent setting. Thank you.
You know, if you moved around a corner, you wouldn't have to mow grass or shovel snow again. Okay. Further comment or question?
Yeah, just one. Lexington Village could end up in the same way here.
Maybe Pauline could address
sold
that.
Sold out already.
Lexington Village, we converted in August of 06.
And we sold out of the units in 2008.
Right, you sold them all, but I'm just saying, if the market dictates, you could ask for the same request at Lexington, couldn't you?
We could, but okay. We are okay. Not.
All right.
Okay. Motion second. Any other discussion? Hearing none, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? So carries. Brings us to item C, and that is to receive the Planning Commission recommendation and consider Ordinance 13-16, adopting the Village of Pleasant Prairie Park and Open Space Plan for the 2013-2018, and this is as a component of the 2035 Comprehensive Plan.
Mr. President, members of the Board, the Village of Pleasant Prairie Park and Open Space Plan 2013-2018 was put together by the Village Park Commission and staff and consultants. This is a park plan that has been worked on over the last couple of years, 2-3 years, by the Park Commission and the staff. And it was presented to the Village Park Commission at their last meeting for adoption. A public hearing was held by the Village Plan Commission at their last meeting, and it was recommended for adoption as part of the comprehensive plan. Specifically, this plan satisfies the requirements for the state for updating our local comprehensive park plan and meeting the requirements to maintain eligibility for grant funding and for the acquisition and development of park and recreational facilities through the state stewardship and federal lock-on programs, and it also assures that park planning goals, objectives, and policies are current. This is a pretty detailed plan. Primarily what was done was a lot of the information that is in here was compiled through a survey that was completed and the analysis of a survey that was completed by the consultant, and there was information inserted that updated all the population and demographic information. We updated all the park and recreational information, and we also included a number of conceptual plans that have been approved by the Park Commission, Plan Commission, and Board over the last 10 years. There are a number of recommendations as part of the last chapter that identify the various program policies, recommendations, and actions that could be taken by the Park Commission as well as other departments of the village. One of the things I'd like to point out is that all of the programs and recommendations in this park plan are really based on a case-by-case basis of what funding might be available to the village, what donations might be available, or acquisitions or donations that are made as development continues to proceed through the village. The Park Commission understands that the budget is very limited with respect to having the frozen levy limits for the village, and they understand that that very few items will be probably budgeted for approval over the next couple of years, but it's a good plan that outlines a number of the different programs and different activities and a number of the items that aren't just capital intensive but other types of activities that the community as well as the village could be involved in pursuing park and recreational activities and supporting those types of activities in our community. The I can go through it page by page if you'd like me to, but we've already done that before the other commissions, and they both endorsed and supported this plan, and we're looking to adopt it as part of our comprehensive plan amendment. I understand that the Park Department, Public Works Department, are looking for approval and consideration by the board this evening, as they are looking to submit some application for some future grants this spring.
Everything was presented to board members, so if you have a question, now would be time to ask.
You know, it was very well presented in the Planning Commission last week. Consequently, I want to make a motion to adopt Ordinance 1316.
Second.
Motion by Steve, second by Monica. Any further discussion? Hearing none, this is a roll call vote.
Yes, sir. John Steinbrink.
Aye.
Monica Uvas.
Aye.
Steve Komorkowitz.
Aye.
Clyde Allen.
Aye.
Mike Serpy.
Aye.
Motion carries. That brings us to item D, and that is receive the Planning Commission recommendation and consider Ordinance 13-17 to amend Section 420-41A and C of the Village Zoning Ordinance to clarify requirements of a home occupation permit.
Mr. President, members of the board, before you is Ordinance Text Amendment Number 13-17 to amend Section 420-41A and C of the Village Zoning Ordinance. And this is to clarify the requirements of the home occupation permit. Again, we're not modifying and changing, but we're just clarifying the existing ordinance. This was recommended for consideration by the Village Board by their initiation of the original resolution 13-08, and the following amendments I'll present to you now. Just to clarify, the home occupation shall be carried out by the property owner or occupant at their primary place of residence, and the home occupation use shall be clearly incidental to a residential use of the principal or accessory structure. In the ordinance now, we've decided to clearly define what primary residence means. Number one, the place where the owner or the occupant's habitation is fixed without any present intent to move and to which, when absent, the person intends to return. Two, the primary residence of a person performing the home occupation is the main home that the person lives in for majority of the year, as defined by the Internal Revenue Service. A person shall not have more than one primary residence for the purpose of creating or operating a home occupation. Three, when a person's spouse and or family resides in one place and the other spouse's business is conducted at another place, the former place establishes the place of primary residence for the purpose of determining whether a home occupation may be conducted at the requested premises. And number four, no person gains the right to conduct a home occupation at a residence while living there for temporary purposes only. The other modification, or this is a modification that we have added, and this states at the bottom that there shall be no more than two home occupations conducted from the same premises, provided that the combined home occupation usage does not exceed 25% of either the principal or the accessory buildings on the premises, and all other home occupation requirements set forth in the ordinance sections are being met. There was a public hearing before the Village Planning Commission where this was considered as part of a public hearing. The staff and the Plan Commission recommend approval, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have with respect to Ordinance 13-17.
Gene, what is the signage allowance for a home occupation?
Two by two foot, 4 square feet unlighted sign. It has to be on the primary place of residence or on the accessory structure. It can't be posted out at the street.
Okay. Is there any restriction on the amount of employees that can work out of this home?
Yes, there is. And I believe it's two employees other than the person that lives there. There is a specific provision.
And that would include then parking as well? Automobiles on the premise?
I don't believe that there is a provision with respect to the number of vehicles that could be parked on the premises. They have to be parked in an all-surface driveway, gravel parking area, but I don't believe we have a limit on how many vehicles that can be parked.
And how would we inspect these places for compliance?
Well, they would initially they would submit an application, but one of the things that I do is I go to the premise to identify exactly what portion of the house is being occupied by the home occupation. If there's some question in my mind with respect to how they're operating, then we take a look at what area is being occupied. We look to see if that is their primary place of residence. We check their driver's license. We check their utility bills. Sometimes I contact the police department for them to do some additional checking to see where the motor vehicles are registered. So there's a number of background things that we check if, in fact, it appears that they aren't actually living there or they're only living there part-time, and we go through all that analysis. Typically, to be honest with you, a lot of complaints might arise from residents nearby or neighbors nearby that would lead us to believe that there may be a question or concern as to how the home is being used, and it may or may not be used as a primary residence.
Move approval of 13-17.
Second. Motion by Mike, second by Clyde. Any further discussion? Hearing none, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So carries. Brings us to item E, and has received the Planning Commission recommendation to consider resolution 13-11 for a floodplain boundary adjustment on a 91-acre vacant property located on the east side of 88th Avenue south of Bain Station Road.
Mr. President, I would ask that items E, G, and H, oh, no, excuse me, E and G be taken up at the same time, and that item F has been requested to be withdrawn at this time. There are some details that they are still working out with respect to the certified survey map, so I'd ask that E and G be taken up at the same time. It's the same property owner.
Okay, and to include item G, which is to receive the Planning Commission recommendation to consider ordinance 13-18 and 13-19 to amend the zoning map to add a PUD planned unit development overlay district and a zoning text amendment to create the specific planned unit development district on the vacant 91-acre generally located approximately 1/4 mile south of Bain Station Road on the east side of 88th Avenue for the proposed 1.2 million square foot warehouse and distribution facility to be known as Majestic Badger Logistics Center. Jean?
Mr. President, members of the board, this is a request for the Majestic Badger Logistics Center, again located about 1/4 mile south of Bain Station Road on the east side of 88th Avenue on a vacant 91-acre property as shown on the slide. Specifically, Badger had requested a number of previous approvals, which have been granted by the Village Plan Commission and the Village Board. There was an amendment to the Village's comprehensive plan back in October of 2012, where we modified the comprehensive plan to allow for industrial development for their entire property. A conceptual plan was also considered that night, which identified that a 1.2 million square foot warehouse distribution building facility would be located on the property. There were some zoning text and map amendments that were presented because the very northern portion of their property was zoned A2, and we were bringing that into the M2 General Manufacturing District. The floodplain and the C1 Lowland Resource Conservancy districts remained unchanged at the time, and the site and operation plan was conditionally approved by the Plan Commission at the May 13, 2013, for the approval, subject to a number of conditions, and a couple of additional conditions have arisen since last week, and I'd like to talk through those conditions because they will be conditions of the approval this evening as well. Again, the facility that they're looking to construct, technically 1,180,480 square foot warehouse distribution facility. It's being designed so that the building can be divided into up to 4 tenant spaces. Ongoing access to the village's sanitary sewer line that runs through the site will be enhanced through a gravel maintenance path access to get to each of the manholes and to the main line. This is a generalized site plan for the development. And north is actually in this direction. So going north, 88th Avenue, again, the building fits into the east. There's an entrance at the north end, another entrance at the south end that has a guardhouse. There'll be docks along the west side as well as docks along the east side. There'll be some parking on the very north end and the south end for vehicular traffic for the employees and such, and another car parking lot to the north. Truck parking, additional truck parking will be at the very northeast side of the site. And then this is the railroad just to the east, as well as the ATC We Energy's transmission line area. As part of one of the requests this evening, they are seeking a floodplain boundary adjustment. As you can see, they're looking to do some modifications and doing some filling in certain areas, and they'll be doing some cut in other areas. Again, they are working through the process. There was some slowdown at the Wisconsin DNR with respect to reviewing their formal request for the floodplain boundary adjustment. Even though that has not been finalized, we've added all of our conditions, including some additional ones this past week that our engineering department has given them. So we are seeking a request for an approval of the floodplain boundary adjustment subject to all these comments and conditions as outlined in the staff memorandum. Again, specifically, they're looking to remove 98,173 cubic feet of floodplain and to create 99,144 cubic feet of floodplain. To compensate for the floodplain, they are not required to do an equal area, equal volume, as we once were. It's basically based on an equal volume calculation, and they meet that test or that requirement. As I mentioned, site access and parking. One of the things that we had talked about at the Plan Commission meeting, and I just wanted to clarify for the developer, is that based on their site plans and based on the fact that a planned unit development is being required for this project due to the zero lot line setback at this very southeast corner, that we are asking for additional setbacks to the residential agricultural land to the north. And so we are looking for a 70-foot setback. Their plan shows 68 feet 2 inches, or 10 inches. So they'll need to set it back an additional 2 inches. And then at this location right here, according to the plans, it was all measured at 90 feet, according to all the site plans that have been provided to me. So we are, again, asking for 90 feet here and 70 feet here. In addition, some of the additional items that they're adding on this north end is they are going to be putting in some significant evergreens and trees to help buffer, as well as putting in a berm and then a chain-link fence that's vinyl-coated. So there'll be a number of layers of berming or buffering in between. In addition, just to the west of that, this is by Kenosha County. The northern the western portion is actually the Kenosha County Cemetery, and then this area right here is actually open. Currently, I believe it's being farmed to some extent. There is not going to be any direct access, so there needs to be some further discussion with the village as to what's going to happen with respect to this particular property, because it really does become landlocked with the cemetery in the front and then the development to the south with having that access road coming in. This is just another illustration of the landscape plan. Obviously, at the scale, it's very difficult to see. They are doing a repeating pattern of berming, landscaping, trees, and then there's going to be a series of retaining walls as well along certain portions of the development. I do have the plans with me if there's any board members that have any additional questions, but we do have the details and the blow-ups of these particular plans. Again, this shows the landscaping on the north end and the berming. The islands are being landscaped as well. There'll be some landscaping on either side right here. And then this is intensively landscaped all along this whole 88th Avenue east side, along with some additional treatments at the corners of the building as you enter into the site. The current zoning of the property is M2, General Manufacturing District. Again, there's some C1, Lowland Conservancy, and FPO, Floodplain Overlay District. The conservancy elements will remain unchanged at this time, but what they're requesting is a PUD overlay. And again, the purpose for the PUD overlay is to grant some modifications to the zoning ordinance with respect to some dimensional variations. And again, that dimensional variation that they're looking for is at this corner. Due to this amount of green space and the railroad tracks, the staff is recommending that there be a zero setback at that location. But again, in exchange for that, they are going to be graveling all of that area that's identified for the sanitary sewer to provide access for the village to get to those manholes. They're going to be increasing the setbacks at these two locations for the parking lot for the trucks as well as the vehicles, and they're going to be intensively doing some screening in addition along 88th Avenue. I've also asked them to do some additional articulation bump outs at these two corners with respect to the architecture of the building and to look at adding some additional striping and darkening the colors. Again, this is a development that's going to be across from future residential, but right now there is residential and farm users that are directly to the west of this. And we feel that even though there's going to be a lot of screening along 88th Avenue, we want them to improve the appearance and corners and the visual appearance of what's facing to the west. They have at this point asked for the certified survey map to be withdrawn until we can get all of the easement language and all of the final documents placed correctly on the certified survey map. Maybe they're working with respect to a further land division. I'm not sure. But they've just asked for this to be withdrawn at this time, be brought back at a subsequent meeting to the Plan Commission and to the board.
Do you want this tabled or withdrawn?
Do you want to come up and just address that real quick, just so that it's on the record, because I don't have anything?
Can I go back to the Plan Commission, too?
No, it went to the Plan Commission.
Mm-hmm. You just said it has to go back to Plan Commission.
If we withdraw it. It depends if it gets withdrawn, or I'm not sure exactly what they are requesting.
If you table an item, it would be tabled just to the next meeting. If you postpone it, which would be June 3rd, which everything would have to be done by May 28th. So if you postpone it, but if it's going to go back to Plan Commission, well, we can postpone it. It stays off the agenda until it's ready to come back.
Okay. Well, let me ask you, Josh Wheeler with Vice President Majestic Realty, 13181 Crossroads Parkway North, City of Industry, California. The issue isn't our engineer Adam here. It's also with the floodplain boundary adjustment. It's with the Wisconsin DNR for their approval first, and the same staff that reviews that is also reviewing the breach of the dam from the heavy rains a month ago. And so it's stuck in this kind of quagmire with them. So we're kind of at their mercy. We've given them everything they want. You know, Adam can give a little more detail of timing, but we're kind of at their mercy until they can overcome the issue that they're taking care of.
You're
now
referring to the dam at Bong Recreation?
Yeah.
So would any of this affect the Plan Commission's recommendation?
It would not affect the Plan Commission's recommendation because they knew some of that information at the Plan Commission meeting. So as a result, the Plan Commission recommended approval subject to a number of these conditions being clarified and verified by the DNR with respect to the floodplain. And we just got additional email from the DNR late last week, and they still haven't addressed it. So it's up to the board whether or not they would like to see this matter approved tonight, subject to all those same conditions, or postponed for a week, or with John.
Apparently there's a disconnect up in Madison on jobs, isn't there?
I'd recommend that it be postponed until they've got some
certainty. Yes, I can't answer when we're going
to
get that. Yes. So I think postpone it until we receive all the documents for the flood payment.
Then it will stay off the agenda until it's ready to come back on.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
All right. Well, where were we?
I have a question. Could this building ever be considered for a rail spur?
Or what?
It could be, but I think, there'd have to be some significant floodplain.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
But there would, they would have to rework their site, sort of accommodate, tracks coming in through the floodplain and modifying that. But it's not doable.
It could be, but it costs a lot of money. So it does go through a floodplain, and we'd have to look at regrading. But as of right now, we're not contemplating it. If such tenant needs it, then I think we'd bring it back up.
So you want approval on F? That's a certified survey map?
Actually, not quite yet.
No.
What?
I have one other thing that I wanted to talk about.
Oh, well, in that case, continue.
There were about six or seven items that we discussed as a staff right before the meeting this evening and with the developer this evening. And I just wanted to bring this to your attention that we would like to make sure that these get considered as conditions of approval as well. and the first of which is there was some question with respect to a storm water and storm sewer that's coming across or coming north and coming across the site, and it looks like it's just kind of directed and pointed at this location to the north, and that has raised some concerns, and so we do want to see that particular matter clarified, redirected. We don't want it just to be spilled over on, even though they're redirecting offsite water, we don't want it just continued and dumped directly offsite onto the adjacent land so that it creates any type of ponding or problem in this particular area for the property owner to the north.
Yeah, I just in the engineering department's review of this, I went back and looked at our comments, and we have made comments to the developer's engineer to address the issue of, it's called a bypass storm sewer, and we've asked them to take a look at that. I also spoke with Adam Arts prior to the meeting to make him aware of that we need to address that.
Shouldn't that water be retained as other water is? Or?
This is actually water. No, it's existing. It's not part of the new development. It's actually a bypass of the existing drainage from the area prior to the development. So they're not required to treat it for water quality.
What about for velocity? I mean,
well, that was
bypass water.
Yeah, that was the other thing that we said in our comments, that they need to address where it's going and also the potential for washouts and also flooding areas adjacent to the site.
Then the next five items are items that had come up at the Plan Commission and at the end, and then they were part of the conditions. So they are in the conditions. One is the colors of the building. We want to make sure that they're deep and not faded and light colors. We want to make sure that they're deeper colors, and adding additional striping on the building to give it a little bit more color on that building. Bump outs at the two corners facing 88th Avenue, the 70-foot setback for the parking lot for the cars on the north end, the 90-foot setback on the north end for the trailer parking, both of which I scaled off their plans, extending that, making sure that the pines are extended across the full length of the trailer court parking as a buffering area to the land to the north. One of the questions, and again, will need to be addressed, is that storm sewer kind of dead ends right in the center of those pines, so we need to make sure that gets addressed. And then one of the items that came up at the Plan Commission meeting was the neighbors on either side, basically on H, on either side extending up. We wanted them to understand what the exact impact was going to be with respect to the widening of for the turn lanes and for the bypass lane and such. They've actually brought those plans with them this evening and are going to be contacting the impacted property owners, Mr. Drager, Mr. Kivik, Mr. Steinbrink, and then Mr. Steinbrink to the north, and meet with them to show them specifically how that's going to impact their properties and their driveways. And then one of the last things that was added after the Plan Commission meeting, and they had questioned, and we're not ready for this yet, but there's an additional TIA, traffic impact analysis, that's being conducted by the Village Engineering Department for this particular area and some off-site transportation systems and intersections. And one of the discussions is that each of the developments should be paying their fair share for the off-site intersection improvements, whether they be roundabouts or other type of traffic improvements. Not that just the first one to the table gets a pass. I mean, everybody should be paying their fair share through a transportation improvement fee, and that's something that we need to work out. I don't know what that fee is. I know that they've asked for an estimate of that fee. I don't know what it is. I don't know if the engineer can give us a ballpark on that. I don't know that we can provide that at this point. Everyone who's benefiting should be paying for a percentage of the cost to improve that intersection or either of those intersections at 95th or at Bain Station. So those comments are all in the staff comments that you have. I just want to bring those out, bring them to everyone's attention.
So, Mr. President, you know, what language are you proposing to effectuate this so that, because right now we're, you know, as I'm reading, we're agreeing to talk about it, but I mean.
All of the comments that I have addressed just now are in the staff comments right now, with the exception of the very first one. And that one was the stormwater drainage at the northeast corner needs to be addressed. So that's the one that is not in the staff comments that you have and that the developer has that we do need to make some specific direction on as to what you would like them to do and how we want to get that approved.
So we need, I guess my recommendation is it would need to be addressed to the satisfaction of the village engineer that, you know, the whatever solution and prepares is viable and it's going to meet our stormwater requirements. Are you comfortable with that?
Mike.
What's the speed limit on 88th Avenue right now?
45.
Okay. And there's no lighting. Now we're going to have semis 24 hours a day coming and going?
I can't say.
I'm going to guess it is. And I think the speed limit has to be addressed because these semis coming and going out of this facility are not going to go from 0 to 60 in 3 seconds. So I think, and I think there's got to be a certain amount of lighting that should be considered in that area so people can see these trucks traversing across the road.
I think that's one of the other items. And, you know, as Gene indicated, you know, we're doing a broader area TIA analysis in there. And I think that's, you know, maybe that's one of the recommendations that we got to get out there. What, you know, if their recommended speed is 35 and what that ends up looking like. You know, one of the problems that we're kind of faced with is this thing is on a faster track than the TIA is. That's going out to, it's out to bid right now. And we're waiting to award it. So, but which means we're still a ways away from the findings of it. So as those findings are put together, I think, you know, Gene's comments are that it should be conditioned on their acceptance of those recommended findings. I mean, right now we can't even tell them what those are, but, I mean, we're going to need to have some result. I know we had some concerns about the initial traffic study was prepared by their consulting engineer, and that's one of the reasons we folded that into an existing program that we're going to do ourselves. So, I mean, I just don't want any heartburn on everybody's part that when we actually come up with the numbers and we evaluate, you know, maybe the, you know, one of the solutions is for the traffic, the speed to come down to 35, that's going to kind of trigger different types of improvements that happen along there, whether it be lighting or, you know, how long the bypass lane is or what have you. That's, right now, that's a major unknown. I mean, what we do know is, you know, what their traffic study produced, but we have some concerns about the, you know, how that was conducted. So.
And what time of day and what day?
When the traffic counts were taken, you know, and the time of day, and then what day of the week those were taken, or the time of the year. So we've done, Kenosha County's been working with us. They've done traffic counts to, you know, with their equipment, and the numbers have gone up from what was received in the study, so. And I don't want to be in a position where we're telling Majestic or anybody else, you're here first, so you're going to pay for everything. And we also don't want to say you're here first, so you don't have to pay for anything. But we need to arrive at what the impacts are, and then, you know, arrive at a proportionate share of making sure it can work. Maybe because something doesn't get constructed right away, but there's a commitment that when whatever improvement's made, it's.
Just one other comment on the traffic, if you want to consider something. The solar powered, maybe a flashing yellow as a caution for both directions, north and south, to alert people that, you know, I just can imagine. I mean, you got a 35 mile an hour speed limit. It's going to be enforceable at somewhere around 45. Now, if you keep it at 45, it's going to be enforceable around 55.
Right.
So, I mean, it's definitely got to be addressed. And I think the lighting and the caution notification should be a part of this. It's a huge building. It's going to be busy. Great, you know, but let's make sure it's as safe as it can be also.
Steve?
Yeah, my concern is over there. We got Lakeview Academy with traffic from the kids over there. And that area is 35 miles an hour right now.
Right there. Right.
And then go south to 165.
Right. Well, this would be extending it up to Bain Station or probably up to C.
I'll enforce it.
Majority of their traffic is
for Lakeview.
For Lakeview.
Okay.
Okay. We're acting on items E and G, and we're going to table item F. We have not. You want us to table F first?
No, E and then
G.
F and then G.
No withdrawal. No.
Postpone it.
Postpone it.
Are we postponing
first?
Yep.
Yes.
Item E, I would move approval of resolution 13-11.
Second.
Motion by Mike, second by Steve. Any further discussion?
Subject to the comments and conditions?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing none, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So carries. Item G then?
Item F.
Make a motion to postpone item F.
Second.
Motion by Clyde, second by Mike. Any further discussion? Seeing none, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So carries. Now we're at item G.
Motion to approve ordinance 13-18 and 13-19.
Second.
Motion by Monica, second by Steve. Any further discussion on those?
Mr. President.
13-18, 13-19.
Like
you want
to
them separately or you want?
No, I just would like to add with the conditions set forth.
In this evening's meeting?
Yes.
As well as the conditions on the staff memorandum?
Yeah.
Correct.
Right.
Yeah.
Item G with conditions on 13-18, 13-19. Now is there further discussion? Hearing none, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? So carries. And I think we have those covered. Thank you, gentlemen. That brings us to item H. Consider the request for a one-year extension of the conceptual plan for the proposed Paradise Lake subdivision on the properties generally located south of 104th Street and 22nd Avenue.
Mr. President, members of the board, this is a request from Lou Giacoli, developer and owner, for another one-year extension for the conceptual plan for the proposed Paradise Lake subdivision. Again, this development is proposed south of 104th Street at about 22nd Avenue. They have received one-year extensions in the past. Again, since 2008, things have been somewhat depressed from the economic standpoint with respect to new single-family developments. And so they are asking for, again, one more one-year extension to April 21st, 2014, subject to all of the conditions that are on file with the Community Development Department. In addition, the preliminary plat will need to comply with any new village ordinance requirements that may be in effect since the village's initial 2008 conditional approval.
I make a motion to approve the request subject to the conditions.
Second.
Motion by Steve, second by Clyde. Any further discussion on this item? Hearing none, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So carries. Brings us to item I. Consider the professional engineering services agreement to design the construction, utilities, and grading for 116th Avenue Extension.
Mr. President, members of the board, the village is proposing to extend 116th Avenue South, approximately 25 or a quarter mile, to allow for potential development. What we're talking about right here, this is premium. Well, this is the overall. I have a better figure for you. This is I-94. This is 165. This is 118th Street. This is Corporate Drive. The premium outlets are right here. You want to go to the next picture? 120th Avenue. This is the existing premium outlets. The existing 116th Avenue ends right just in back of the premium outlets there. And there's been interest in developing this area, so we are looking at providing the infrastructure to allow that to happen. So as I had indicated, there's about a quarter mile of a road here that would temporarily end in a cul-de-sac for now. And then this work by the village would also include the provision of there is water in the existing street. We'd be extending that southward, as well as sanitary sewer would then flow northward into the existing gravity sewer that's existing. What you see here in this site is a potential layout of two buildings that could fit in this area. The project that we're looking at also would include the retention. This is the lower area of the site, so the stormwater from this area as well as from the new roadway would extend through a sewer to the east. To design this work, I asked for proposals from two consultants, Clark Dietz and Crispell Snyder. I got scopes from both of them. I also asked them for a price proposal, and the estimated not to exceed fee from Crispell Snyder was $105,600, and the fee from Clark Dietz was $119,000. They're both qualified firms, so based on the prices that I received, I'd recommend that the village enter into a contract with Crispell Snyder to design these infrastructure improvements for future development in this area. It's adjacent to the TID.
Mike?
Just to set some context of this, you know, what's up there is conceptually what could be placed. You know, the village concurrently is working on, and I believe the Plan Commission will be considering a proposed zoning ordinance for a manufacturing district to be created. And what we're looking to do is create, in this case, in addition to tax increment district and taking advantage of utilities that we already have in the area and being able to create a new addition to the TIF district that would supply manufacturing facilities where jobs would come here that would be of a manufacturing nature. This wouldn't be a warehouse district. It would be something that would provide an area where more jobs could take place. And it would be close to some of the existing amenities that are out there. And we're going to be looking at some other areas. So really, we're not designing this for any specific user at this time, although it could be. It's not going to be we're going to work at this to create, in part, the numbers we're going to be able to use to evaluate the impact on the TIF district and the impact on the tax base for the village as well as for the TIF district. We think, based on discussions we've had with a number of developers in the area, that there is a market for this. We think that being proactive in identifying the areas where we can accommodate additional development, future development, and have that development be of a nature that's manufacturing more than warehousing can be accomplished successfully, and it's going to be a wise and prudent use of the land resources we have that have not been developed yet but are developable. So when you're improving this contract tonight, that's really where we're heading with this. This isn't, although somebody could come in and say they want to develop that site, we're really looking more at the big picture. You know, when Mike identified the sanitary sewer, we're going to take a look at more than just this site here. We're going to look at a broader area that could be, you know, we need to know as we plan this thing out how much sewer capacity we have, you know, where would a lift station be, things like that. And I think it's a good move for the village to be able to position ourselves to be able to accommodate additional construction for a manufacturing use or uses in that area. And it would be in an area that, again, wouldn't affect residential users nearby, and the commercial amenities are also there. We don't have a developer we're working with. But we do want to take and make sure that these land uses are put under the proper zoning so that we can protect the land that's there and have it develop in a manner that we want to have. And I think, Gene, this has probably come back to the board on the next board meeting or two board meetings from now?
June 17th.
So this is just a small piece of a bigger project that we're working on, but I think there's a lot of good potential in this area for us to accomplish this. So I'd recommend that the contract be awarded to Christian Snyder and support Mike's recommendation.
So moved.
Second.
A motion by Steve, second by Monica. Any further discussion?
Mike? Just whoever's idea, this good visionary, whoever thought about this.
It was a group effort.
Never take the credit, right?
Motion second. No further discussion. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So carries. Brings us to item K. Let's see. I'm sorry, item J, consider professional services agreement, form a traffic impact analysis for Lakeview Corporate Park.
Mr. President, members of the board, as was alluded to earlier this evening, there are a number of developments that are being constructed or are planned for the Lakeview Corporate Park. Previous discussion centered on Majestic, and we have decided that it really makes sense to have a comprehensive traffic study of the entire corporate park so that we can adequately plan for the traffic. And we can look at the existing intersections to determine that the geometry, what the geometry should be with the future improvements and so forth. Some of the, let's see here, developments that, just to get an indication, again, we mentioned Majestic, the Meyer Distribution Center, which is number one there, Tachen International, which is number three down there, the Zilber property, which is right there, the former Rot Washer building, which is down there, number five. And then go to the next drawing. Well, I guess it's on this one, too. Then we have the Park and Ride there. We're looking, like we said right now, those intersections just east of the Interstate Corporate Drive and the existing East Frontage Road, and for the development that we may do, that may happen in that area to the south. So it makes sense to do a comprehensive, and I've worked with the DOT, their traffic person, to devise a scope and to make sure everything is comprehensive. Because the plan that we want, ultimately, once this traffic study is done, this can also be a vehicle to allow the village to, and or developments to obtain grant funding, T-grant funding, for transportation improvements for new businesses that bring in jobs. So it's all connected here. With that said, I went out for proposals from consultants for three firms. Two firms did respond. The third firm that didn't respond said they were too busy and couldn't serve us as quickly as we needed. The two firms that responded were Crispell Snyder and Trafficked Analysis and Design Incorporated, TADDY for short. I asked for a scope to determine the existing level of service, the future conditions, level of service, crash analysis on the arterials. They would also look at traffic counts and really look at a comprehensive management plan for the area. There was mentioned too about Majestic and some of the timing for the peak hours. One of the things that I want to make sure that doesn't happen again, I'm going to be working very closely with should this go forward, very closely with the consultant to make sure that their analysis is consistent with where and when our peak hours are to make sure that they've got it adequately addressed. So with that, I received two proposals. Again, I did ask for a price. The price from Traffic Analysis and Design was $26,966. The proposal from Crispell Snyder was over $50,000. It's one of these things where I've gone back and forth. I analyzed both proposals, and I think Crispell Snyder may have they had their new firm that they've merged with help with this, and I don't know if they just blew it in terms of their hours or their costs, but the proposal that I have is consistent with everything that we need and the hours that I think are legitimate. So I would recommend that the contract for Traffic Analysis and Design be approved and we move forward with the traffic impact analysis. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Questions? Then a motion is in order.
Move to concur with the engineer's recommendation.
Second.
Motion by Mike, second by Monica. Any further discussion? Hearing none, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So carries. Brings us to item K, consider renewal of an agreement with Kenosha County Humane Society. They're doing business as Safe Harbor Humane Society, and this is for impoundment services.
Mr. President, we see the proposed contract from Safe Harbor. They've requested a 10% increase because of a new law that's been adopted that affects how they provide veterinary services. So that 10% increase would begin July 13th. We, too, have an act that limits how much money we can spend. So on the other hand, I don't know who else is going to provide this service for. So my recommendation is that the village enter into a contract with Safe Harbor for a period of 1 year.
Motion to renew the agreement with Safe Harbor.
Second.
Motion by Monica, second by Steve. Any further discussion? If none, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So carries. Brings us to item L, consider a Board of Review and Police Commission appointments.
Mr. President, I'm recommending that Bill Morris be appointed to the Board of Review as alternate number one for a term that would end in May 1st, 2016. I haven't been able to get a hold of Roger Mayer, so I'm asking that the commission hold off on that appointment at this time until I'm able to visit with him. So.
Okay.
He's in Florida right now, so.
Move approval of Bill Morris and to withhold the further
postpone that.
Postpone the Roger Mayer appointment.
Second. Motion and a second. Motion by Mike, second by Clyde. Any further discussion? Seeing none, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So carries. Brings us to item M, consider operator license applications on file.
Two applications tonight, Patrick Cook and Manuel Reyes, and I would recommend approval of both.
So moved.
Take care of all the ordinances, sir.
Motion by Steve, second by Clyde. Further discussion? If not, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? So carries. Brings us to item 9, Village Board comments. If not, motion by Mike, second by Clyde for adjournment. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? So carries.